You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hi everyone, it's James again. I just wanted to remind you that this is part two of a two-parter, and if you haven't listened to yesterday's podcast, today's might not make a lot of sense. So I would suggest starting there. Obviously, you know, you have your own life, do what you want, but you're going to understand today's a lot more if you start with yesterday's. Today we're speaking to Maniba with the ACLU about the legal response to some of the bizarre things that the city of Asheville has been doing. If you hear reference to Pip in this episode, that's because Pip is another of the activists. They weren't able to make our call, but we're going to be speaking to them as well in our ongoing coverage of this. So hope you enjoy today's episode and know that we'll keep you updated as this moves forward. All right, so our first guest today is Maniba. And Maniba, would you like to introduce yourself, explain your relationship to what we're talking about today?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Maniba Tolliker. I'm a staff attorney with the ACLU of North Carolina. And I represent some of these wonderful folks that you'll be talking to after me. And it's unfortunate that we met this way, but, you know, I'm happy to be working with them. So basically, I can go into it, or do you want to ask me questions about it, or...
I think it'd be great if you could start off by sort of walking us through how mutual aid seems to have met with this bizarre prosecution.
Yeah, of course. So we got connected to, you know, our now clients, this group of individuals who, you know, have been doing important advocacy and mutual aid work on behalf of unhoused folks in Asheville. And we were connected by this other organization called Center for Constitutional Rights, and kind of filled in quickly about how this group of people were not only banned from parks, but these bans were based on this absurd criminal charge called felony littering, which, you know, it sounds as crazy as it is. So, you know, I think my colleagues and I at the ACLU, we were eager to talk to these folks and learn more about what happened and see what we can do and you know, start talking about some of the legal issues that that arise from when a city tries to ban a large group of people from one of the few places that they have to convene and to protest and demonstrate, which, you know, one of the first things I learned in law school is like how, or like one of the first things I think I learned as someone living in the US, like you always hear kids say, oh, I have free speech. Like, you know, free speech is so, it's such a central part of being in this, or like growing up in this country and being a citizen or member of this country, is just the way that it's thrown around sometimes inaccurately. But people generally know that speech should be protected and cannot be restricted except in very narrow ways by the government. Not by, like, you know, your mom. You don't have free speech in front of your mom. Like, that's not, that I learned that quick.
When I took my being an American test, I became a citizen a couple of months ago, and there's like only like 50 questions they can ask you, and I think two of them are like, what is free speech? Like, who, like, can you claim free speech when you get banned from twitter.com? Like, yeah, it's something that's very integral.
And I think you know, it's absurd to criminalize protest, of course, but it's also like equally as troubling to take away this important public space from people that, you know, especially in a city like Asheville, if you've been there, it's one of the few public spaces that people can convene and get together and enjoy each other's company. You know, that being separate from also one of the few places that you can protest and engage in discussion about how to fix problems. So it's really troubling that the city of Asheville had taken that route. So when the ACLU got involved, we thought it would be best to list out some of these legal issues. You know, I mentioned the First Amendment and free speech. But there are also a lot of procedural due process problems that are issues that come up when you ban folks from a park. One of the things that the city didn't do is provide proper notice. So a few of our clients never received notice that they were banned from the park, and you know, found out that they were banned either through the discovery process in their criminal cases or by doing like very intense investigation of their own, which, you know, that is not a, that's just not okay. Like, a city needs to, you need to, this is like a very basic thing, right? Notice and hearing, those are the tenets of procedural due process, and the city fails there. The city then fails again at providing hearing and providing opportunity to appeal these bans. Like, there is no pre-deprivation hearing, first of all. Like, the bans, once our clients receive them, they're banned. They're banned from the parks and cannot go, and didn't have any opportunity to defend why they shouldn't be banned or be heard about why they shouldn't be banned before that ban happened, which is, you know, it's not okay. I think a pre-deprivation hearing is really important when you're taking away an interest like the First Amendment interest that I laid out. And then the hearing that was provided was problematic in a lot of ways. For one, these were very short, cursory hearings that lasted from, I want to say like 5 to 30 minutes, but I'll let Sarah and Pip confirm. And they had people from Asheville Police Department who are, you know, arguably also involved in the criminal cases that several of our clients are still battling through. They were not allowed to ask questions, and, you know, several of our clients do not have the resources to have proper legal representation. So sometimes our clients were there alone and had to fend for themselves and navigate that tricky area of not saying something that could hurt you in your criminal case. And, yeah, you know, the hearing was just a mess in all of the ways.
How does the city like legally justify banning someone from parks? Like, is there a way which they can do that?
So they have this policy called the Restricted Access to City Parks Policy. And it is, I think we should call it the park ban policy. It basically allows the city to ban folks from parks based on certain violations of, I think the categories are city park rules, city parks and recreation department program rules, city ordinances, state laws, and federal laws. So what's interesting is there's nowhere in the policy that says when a person has committed or that defines what a violation of any of these rules are. Like, is that a conviction? Is that a formal like citation? The policy does not provide that. So this is important, I think, especially here where our clients, none of them, or actually I shouldn't say none of them, three of our clients have pled to lesser misdemeanor charges, but everyone else has an open case and they have not been formally convicted of anything. And so it's strange that, you know, you can ban someone based off of a felony charge that hasn't even been fully litigated.
Yeah. Have they banned, is there like a record of the city banning people from parks, or have they just like dug this one up from the bowels of legislation to ban these people?
So that's a really interesting question. And I'd love to know the answer myself. We did submit a public records request to try to figure out if they have, but I imagine the city is not going to want to tell us. And I think, Sarah, you can speak to this later, but I don't think I think they've rejected PRRs that you all have done and have not provided that elusive restricted access list, which they have of like folks that they've banned from the parks. And maybe that list is just, you know, our clients, which...
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know what's worse. Like, if they have a parks blacklist and they're just not notifying people until like they send a SWAT team after them, or if it's only people who are helping unhoused people and they just don't want to admit that. Both of those are pretty dark.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade. With the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Meet Tomboy X. Makers of the original boxer briefs for women, Tomboy X designs gender and size-inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.
On the topic of weird legal things, what on earth is felony littering?
I'd love to know what felony littering is, because I'll tell you this, when I told my partner, like, I was like, oh, did you know there's something called felony littering? And he's like, I hope that's when corporations get punished for, right, you know, dumping toxic waste into the sea. But no, it's apparently when community members come together for a demonstration and the city is mad about what's left behind, which, you know, that's, I think it's really telling that the city has chosen to prosecute folks on this, like, felony littering charge, which, you know, has, I think, in the past 10 years, there's only been one felony littering case out of Buncombe County, where Asheville is.
Okay.
So I think that's really telling, and I think it's really troubling that the city of Asheville seems to be really taking out a position in silencing speech it does not like.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, they just seem to be taking, like, the most bizarre end run around the First Amendment that they can.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of like the Occupy era stuff, where, like, all of these cities suddenly realized that, like, wait, hold on, these people can actually use a park for political activity, and then immediately, like, suddenly all these, like, ordinances started appearing where, like, everyone has to, like, clear out of the park by 10 p.m. so they can clean it or something, that eventually just like, was used to force people out. And I don't know, it seems like there's something interesting too about, like, it seems like it's almost, whenever, like, a city government tries to do something like this, it seems like they always, like, immediately reach for sanitation ordinances. Like, yeah, I'm saying this, like, that was like the big Occupy thing. Like, they're doing this here too, and it's I don't know.
I think all around the country, we're seeing the government fish out these weird ordinances and make new laws to criminalize poverty, and to criminalize unhoused people existing. And I think that trend, unfortunately, carries even in places like Asheville, that are seeing, especially after COVID, you know, there's been a rise in unhoused population everywhere. And so it's really upsetting, but it is the truth that all these ordinances and laws that are being fished out are being fished out to target folks, and new laws that lawmakers are creating.
Now I was thinking about this, I'm remembering there's a whole sort of anthropological literature about, like, how colonial states used like sanitation ordinances as a way to sort of destroy, like, indigenous public spaces in the places they colonized. And I guess, like, yeah, I don't know, like, there's a lot of sort of throughput, I guess, between, like, the sort of old, like, colonial governance regimes and the way that people still use sanitation is like the default way to sort of cleanse people out of public spaces.
I think it's interesting how an analogy one can make maybe is that like, there are people with rights and people without rights, even when in theory we all have rights, and like this attempt to sort of use sanitation to be like, oh, well, these people's rights don't matter, or they don't have those rights at all. It's not linked to the way like metropoles rule colonies.
I think also just, going back to this position that the city of Asheville is taking, what's really troubling is like the different angles that they're coming at this issue with. Like, if you look at, if you look at some of the press releases and blog posts on the city's website about the unhoused population, you might get the sense that they're trying to find solutions to address what they seem to acknowledge as a big problem. But then, on the flip side, you see these actions that directly contradict that sentiment. And, these park bans, that's one of the ways that the city of Asheville kind of indirectly is like, no, please, like, let us do our thing. We don't want to hear anything bad about what we're doing. Like, we're trying our hardest. that's rich on its own, but there's the felony littering charges, there's the park ban, and then alongside all of this, like a few weeks ago, we filed a petition in Buncombe County Superior Court petitioning for the release of police body camera footage of the arrest of two journalists for the release of the footage that shows the arrest of these journalists covering the eviction of encampments of unhoused folks in Aston Park on Christmas night in 2021. So around the same time that several of our clients, are being hit with these felony charges, and then shortly after with park bans. And the arrest of journalists in a democracy is very rare and should be troubling. And these journalists, like, just to give you some context, were not shy about their critique of the city and how it's handling the unhoused community. And that critique is protected by the First Amendment, but the city of Asheville, I think, is just, doing its own thing when it's allowing arrests of journalists and the release of that body camera footage. We think is important to just show what happened, because that's kind of strange. Like, just in the same way that felony littering is strange.
Yeah, it does seem like there is kind of a bipartisan commitment to not wanting journalists to meddle with you harassing unhoused people. It seems to be like very much a Democrat thing as well as a Republican thing. What did were those journalists charged with anything, or were they just arrested?
They were also charged with, I want to say, second degree trespass. And they've been pretty vocal about their arrests and I think what's been happening. Like, their names are Veronica Coit and Matilda Bliss. I'm not sure, Sarah, if you want to add more to that, but I think that's like another thread that's important to this story, is like all of the different ways that Asheville is operating to silence folks and to continue doing what they're doing, which, if you look at just their own narrative, where they talk about, oh yes, we've, evicted these folks as a success story. And they'll maybe list like all of the hotels, like free hotel nights that these folks got for one or two nights, but that's obviously not a sustainable solution to you know, the plight of that community.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I think that sometimes things get done because things look good on a press release rather than because it gives anyone like long-term access to housing. So I wonder, like, what's the situation? Several of your clients are now facing felony charges are serious, right? If people maybe aren't in the US or don't realize, maybe you could explain, like, a felony follows you around for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah, and just to be clear, the ACLU is not defending the criminal charges. I think all of our clients have separate representation for their criminal charges. We've taken on the charge of addressing these park bans and how we think they're constitutional. So I'm sure, like, I can speak a little to this, but maybe getting one of the criminal defense attorneys to talk, if they can, about the criminal case might be more helpful.
For sure. Yeah. Maybe can you explain just in general terms, like, what a felony would mean for someone living in North Carolina in terms of just how it would affect their life going forward?
Yeah. So there's a lot, I think, you know, I'm not a criminal lawyer, but let me just think of a few things. You know, having a felony on your criminal record just on its own, nobody wants a criminal record in a country and state that is still looking and, you know, allowing background checks for certain jobs and having to explain that in any context. Like, I will just, you know, let me just talk from my own experience where I've, whenever I am getting admitted to a bar, I've moved a couple of times in the past few years and had to deal with the unfortunate process of being admitted into that state's bar. There are several intrusive questions, and many of those involve, like, what your background is, and that means what your criminal background is. Like, we have to do I have gone through the moral character fitness test for 3 states now, and it's never fun. It's, you know, as someone who is privileged and does not have a criminal history background, it's not fun for me because I, like, the number of questions they ask you, it's like you really, like, you know, have to dig back into the past, like, your whole life. Like, they ask all of the addresses that you've lived at in the past 15 years, and if you get it wrong, you're lying. So you're okay, I'm going off on a tangent, but the point is, like, any sort of certification or job or new opportunity, that is something, a criminal record is something that's looked at and considered, and oftentimes in a negative way, and can result in people not getting jobs. I think Sarah and Pip maybe can explain more about, like, what the consequences would be, like, if you've had conversation with your attorneys. But I also have some background in immigrants' rights work, and I know that if any kind of criminal charges / convictions that you're facing can be used by ICE, can be used by USCIS to deny you immigration privileges and to deport you, to detain you before they deport you. And so, you know, beyond that, like, having to have this hang over your head where the process is not short, it's not easy, it is mentally taxing, and it's honestly degrading to go through our criminal legal system, and it's degrading for everyone. That's all I can say as, like, someone who does, like, general civil rights work. But if you talk to someone who's doing criminal defense work and in this all the time. I'm sure they're, you know, can paint a better picture of how dark that process is and how dark it can be to have that on a record.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Tomboy X, the queer-founded clothing line that's inclusive and sustainable. Underwear, swimwear, and more for all bodies. So you can feel good about protecting the goods. Use the code IHEART to get 20% off your first purchase, only at tomboyx.com.
I think another thing with this is, I am not a lawyer. I'm also not your lawyer, legal advice, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm pretty sure the way it works in North Carolina is that if you have a felony conviction, you can't vote until you serve out the time.
Jesus.
So yeah, like
in country.
It's,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's another thing. And I'm fairly new to North Carolina. I moved here in March, so almost a year, but not quite. So, but I do know that the hoops that you have to jump through just to vote are a lot more than other states that I've lived in. And, you know, of course, that is also another thing done on purpose to silence certain voices.
Yeah, that's dark. And certainly, like, you'll lose your Second Amendment rights. So there'll be jobs you can't do. There will be things you don't have access to. Like, yeah, your rights will go away potentially forever, which is bad when you're just trying to help some people who need some help. It's pretty unconscionable.
Yeah, I think that's the other like really wild thing about all of this is like a lot the folks that are, you know, being banned and being targeted in this way are providing really important services in a way that the city hasn't been able to and hasn't, and it's filling in this really important role of like making sure that folks stay alive and have support and are fed and clothed. And it's unfortunate to have that taken away. Like being banned from a park means being banned from one of the few spaces that our clients had to do this work and where they were able to distribute food and other aid to folks who don't have a home. And it's wild that kind of action is being taken when we know that this is a crisis that the city is just not addressing.
Yeah, they're like taking action against people pointing to the crisis rather than the crisis itself, which is, yeah, very sad. So what stage is your, I know you have to go in a second here. What stage is your, like you said, the ACLU was challenging the park ban. How has that gone for you?
So far, we've sent a demand letter to the city. The city has responded to that letter with right now kind of wishy-washy commitments of like reviewing the policy. And while I think that's a great first step, I do think the city needs to commit to doing more and to commit to retracting the bans for all of our clients and potentially others who have been affected by this policy. They also need to change the policy, like reviewing the policy. That's a great first step, but you know, I want to see like what are the things that they are building in to make sure that folks are getting proper notice, that this policy isn't being abused and used by Asheville Police Department and others in an unfair way, and that there's like, you know, basic standards of like when the policy can be instituted. Like, is there a conviction involved, and what are the convictions? Like, does it make sense to ban someone from a park for, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of like something. Oh, felony literate.
Yeah, it's just so bizarre. Like, it's clown stuff.
It is bizarre. And I think, like, you know, historically, park bans, from what I know, is like they've been used against like people who have committed like sexual offenses, and sure. And so it's kind of out of left field to, and I'll just say this, that the city, like, in their response, they cited to one of the cases that, or two cases that involved sexual offenders who were banned from parks, which, you know.
It's not really the same.
A group of peaceful demonstrators who provided aid to folks who are unhoused. So, you know, it's not really there. The comparison is not there. And I think, I hope the city can be honest. And if they are not willing to put in that work and to take some of these actions that I've laid out, I do think that we will continue to challenge these park bans, and you know, we'll continue to prepare to file suit if that's necessary.
Great. And how can people follow along with that? Or if they want to sort of donate or support it, is there a place they can do that?
You know, our website is a great space to, or our website, I think our socials, like Twitter, and Instagram, like our comms team is amazing, and they update on our work frequently and often. And we try to provide updates there, but also kind of engage with our work and what it means broadly for folks across North Carolina and across the U.S. So, yeah.
Okay, great. And that's just ACLU North Carolina. Those would be the socials. Have I put you on the spot?
Let me look it up. I should know this.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's ACLU of NorthCarolina.org. And if you go to our website, you'll find our socials, but it's probably a variation of that.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for giving us some of your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Right.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Tomboy X, the queer-founded clothing line that's inclusive and sustainable. underwear, swimwear, and more for all bodies. So you can feel good about protecting the goods. Use the code IHEART to get 20% off your first purchase, only at TomboyX.com.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Parrot Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.